Welcome to Trinity Life Church Podcast Weekly Sermon. We hope you enjoy listening.
This is a pretty bleak description of his society. This is a corrupt society where there are no honest men left. Everyone's skilled in doing evil. The establishment abort, and no one can be trusted, not even your lover. As Israel has become more prosperous, so they've become less dependent on God, and they've lost sight of his commandments. It's really tempting for me to draw really broad brush parallels between our society and what we see in Micah's day. In fact, I sent Matt various texts during the week, and he just advised me not to go there. And I do believe it would be grossly unfair. I don't believe our legal system is corrupt. And I'm pretty certain I can trust my wife. But the direction of travel is clear. You turn your back on God's commandments and his word as a people, and there's only one destination you're heading for. And it's that picture. It's that picture of a corrupt society. Micah warns Israel that their behaviours are bringing God's judgment down on their heads. Let's do the... we've done that bit. That's the second bit of the verse. There we go. Look, the Lord is coming down from his dwelling place. He comes down and treads on the heights of the earth. The mountains melt beneath him and the valleys split aside like wax before the fire, like water rushing down a slope. All this is because of Jacob's transgression, because of the sins of the people of Israel. And he predicts the consequences. The imminent destruction of Samaria, the fact that Israel would try and keep the destruction of Samaria secret, the need for residents of various towns to flee, the fact that the rulers of Israel would make slightly strategic decisions about trying to defend certain places, and the eventual exile to Babylon. So historically, he's pretty accurate, as far as I can tell. You know, from the stuff that I've looked at, he's pretty accurate. So a historic level, it's a record of where they were at as a society and the consequences of that, and a prophecy. At the earthly level, though, Micah singles out three specific groups of people for particular criticism. He highlights the behaviours of three groups: the rich, the government, and the state religion of the time. And he doesn't hold back. He really lays into them. Chapter 2, he picks on those who plan iniquity, to those who plot evil in their beds. Come on, next slide, there we go. Okay. Woe to those who plan iniquity, to those who plot evil on their bed. At morning's light they carry it out because it's their power to do it. They covet fields and seize them, and houses and take them. They defraud people of their homes, they rob them of their inheritance. He's picking on people who are lying in their bed. He's calling out people who are lying in their beds at night, plotting schemes to enrich themselves. And because they're so wealthy and powerful, they wake in the morning and they can put those plans into action as if they were God. So the Hebrew, the alternative interpretation of this is that, translation. Says that they put their plans into action as if they were God. Yeah, so they basically put themselves in the place of God because they're so wealthy, they're not challenged. In verses 8 and 9, he accuses them of stripping the rich robes from those who pass by without care, basically peaceful foreigners, and driving women and children from their homes, selling them into slavery so they can sell their homes to service the debts. Depriving God of his glory because the nation of Israel are God's nation. They're not owned by mortal men. Now, let me be clear here. Micah's not condemning the rich simply because they're wealthy. You know, that's not what he's talking about. You know, there are plenty of people who I consider to be wealthy. You might consider them to have average income. I don't know. But there are plenty of people who I consider to be wealthy who don't lie awake plotting how they're going to get themselves richer. They're generous with their money. They have money, but they use that for God's purposes. So it's not just the rich that he's calling out, and we have to be clear about that. He's calling out those who will put anything before, they will service themselves, they will enrich themselves, regardless of what the consequences are for other people, how much hurt and pain and disruption they bring. But obviously, that doesn't happen today, does it? We don't live in a society where people seek their own fortune at the expense of everyone else. We're an enlightened society. It doesn't happen these days. These individuals had spent their entire lives building their little empires, growing their stash, feathering their own beds. And yet their downfall, he warns, is just round the corner. God is plotting against them. I am planning disaster against this people, from which you cannot save yourselves. You will no longer walk proudly, for it will be a time of calamity. In that day, people will ridicule you. They will taunt you with this mournful song. We are utterly ruined, they'll be taunted. People's possession is divided up. He takes it from me. He assigns our fields to traitors. Therefore, you will have no one in the assembly of the Lord to divide the land by lot. What he's promising them here is that God is planning to ridicule them, to reduce them to a position where they are ridiculed. They will be ruined. Their land will be divided up amongst their enemies. And that when that's happened, they will have no land to pass on to their family. Yeah, their ancestral right to that land will disappear. Having pursued everything, they will end up with nothing. Now, if it were me, and I was hearing that response or that warning, I think I might ask, what do I have to do to avoid that? How do I avoid that destiny? How do I get out of that problem? Oh, but no. What these people do is they basically say, have I got the slide for that? I can't remember if I've got a slide for that. I basically say, stop prophesying. We've heard enough from prophets. We don't need more prophets. Which for me has a certain resonance about some stuff that's happened about 2 years ago. Apparently we don't need experts, but hey ho. Micah smacks them down. I did put that up there. Yeah, so they're basically saying, don't prophesy, we're going to be okay. You don't know what you're talking about. It'll all work out fine. Micah responds. He says, if a liar and a deceiver comes and says, I will prophesy for you plenty of wine and beer, that would be just a profit for these type of people. Basically, what he's saying is, you'll believe anything you're told. Someone comes along and says to you, promises you well-being and everything will work out fine. That's the only kind of prophet that these people are going to listen to. We might come back to that later if I've got time. His next target, so he's targeted the rich who are trying to enrich themselves at the cost of everyone else. His next target is the government of the day, who he charges with abandoning justice, hating good and loving evil. He accuses them of consuming their people. Let's see, there we go. There you go, I've got that verse up there. There you go. Listen, you leaders of Jacob, you rulers of Israel. Should you not embrace justice? You who hate good and love evil, who tear the skin from my people and the flesh from their bones, who eat my people's flesh, strip off their skin and break their bones in pieces, who chop them up like meat for the pan, like flesh for the pot. That's some picture, isn't it? You know, a government that's actually, he's accusing effectively of chopping their people up, consuming their people. Any government is entrusted with the faithful administration of justice. It doesn't matter which country you're in. If you're in government, that should be your primary goal, the faithful administration of justice and the protection of your people. But in this case, in the case of Israel, they have an additional layer. They should have been ensuring that God's law was fulfilled, seen through. And yet here, we see Micah is telling them that they are the equivalent of cannibals, stripping and devouring their subjects, exploiting them rather than protecting them. A far cry from their God-given role. A society gets its character from its government. And you see that across the world. You know, if you have a society reflects the government it has, not least because it elects the government it has. So there's a symbiotic relationship. You know, the government reflects the people and the people reflect the government. So is it any surprise that in Micah's day, their society was so corrupt and so fallen from where God was meant to be if their government was like that? If their very rulers were pursuing their own agendas rather than God's? Now, obviously, that was only an issue in Micah's day. Doesn't really happen these days, does it? Not in our Western world. But what does Micah predict for them? He basically predicts that, well, when you need God, when you call out to him because you're in a time of crisis, he's going to turn his back on you. He's going to ignore your cries for help. Because as a government, you've turned your back on him. And you will be defeated. And that's, you know, that's a story, you know, that earthly and a historic level, that is a story here, that the government had abandoned God and he abandoned them. Finally, he charges the state religion with being, finally, Micah charges the state religion with leading God's people astray. He accuses the priests of basically propping up a corrupt state, of taking money for blessings and for condemning and cursing those who aren't prepared to pay for the services that the priests are offering. They're serving themselves rather than God. And they are destined to be shamed and disgraced. So far, so bleak. Pretty grim picture. But Micah's message is one that holds out hope as much as judgment. Reassurance that God has a plan, and hints of that plan are sprinkled throughout the book. So on a divine level, we've got the historic level, we've got the earthly level, but on a divine level, God lays out his plan for long-term salvation, not just of the nation of Israel, but for the world. In Micah 4, verses 11 to 12, he refers to Israel's gathering enemies who are coveting Zion. You know, they're all gathered against you. They say, let her be defiled, let her eyes gloat over Zion. But they don't understand. They do not know the thoughts of the Lord. They do not understand his plan, that he had gathered them like sheaves to the threshing floor. His enemies think that they're about to launch a huge victory, an offensive of their own making. They don't understand that actually they're part of God's plan. They're just simply pawns. God goes on to promise that out of the carnage and defeat, he will raise up a remnant. Chapter 2, verses 12 to 13. I will surely gather all of you, Jacob. I will surely bring together the remnant of Israel. I will bring them together like sheep in a pen, like a flock in a pasture. The place will throng with people. The one who breaks open the way will go before them. They will break through the gate and go out. Their king will pass through before them, the Lord at their head. The references in this particular passage to the one who breaks open the way and goes before them, the king, they're all references to Christ. They're messianic references. And where does Micah say that this king will come from? Bethlehem. He predicts in chapter 5 that Bethlehem will be the source of the one who will come from God to be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from old, from ancient times. The remnant, Micah says, will be sent to the nations to bring blessings like dew and like showers, the gospel message, a message of salvation. And the world will be saved. If you look at chapter 4, which I don't think I could fit on one slide because it's quite long, chapter 4 paints a picture of a post-salvation world, a picture of peace and prosperity. And that's where the famous verse, they beat their plowshares into swords. Their swords into plowshares. Wrong way around. Easy mistake to make. That's where that verse comes from, chapter 4. He talks about Christ coming back, people seeking the word of the Lord, a nation swept by peace, of prosperity, people sitting under their fig trees without a fear in the world. We see the house of the Lord being established, the nations coming, a spiritual awakening really, a global spiritual awakening. And from this, the law and the word of the Lord will spread out, and as a result, there will be global peace. So let's have a quick recap then, because I know there's been a lot of verses. We have three levels, the historic, earthly and divine. Divine promises salvation and restoration. The earthly is a critique of the society that Micah sees around him at the time, which through its sin has brought down God's judgment And the historic is a description of how that judgment is to be played out. Part of Micah's frustration with Israel is that they should know better. Throughout the Old Testament, we see a cycle of God rescuing Israel, blessing them, only for them to gradually drift away from him into sin, at which point the cycle starts again. There's judgment, followed by restoration and forgiveness, and the cycle starts again. It's a repeating pattern. Micah screams this at Israel. He says, "My people, what have I done to you? How have I burdened you? Answer me. I brought you out of Egypt, and I redeemed you from the land of slavery. I sent Moses to lead you, also Aaron and Miriam." It is human nature that as we become comfortable, we forget the blessings that God has given us. We become complacent, and we start to think that we can do things under our own steam rather than relying on him. But that sense of self-reliance, other than reliance on God, leads to a selfishness and eventually a disintegration of our society and eventually to judgment. Make no mistake, judgment is coming, and we are in the end days. But we are saved. You know, God's grace has reached out and we are saved. And there is a plan. So what do we do as Christians to ensure that we stay close to God? Mike is quite clear that our relationship with God is not based on our offerings. He offers up, you know, should I come to you with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000 rivers of olive oil? Shall I offer my firstborn for my transgression? He dismisses that and he says no. He reminds Israel that God has already told them how he wants them to live and that it's their lifestyles which have been separated them from God. He has shown you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. We live in turbulent times. In some respects, more turbulent than Micah's day. We live in a society which is increasingly divided, with a government that seems to be pursuing and adopting policies that are not designed to restore those divisions. In fact, I would say they're probably designed to deepen them. The divide between rich and poor gets wider on a weekly, yearly basis. Every week we see stories in the news of alleged corruption in the structures that are meant to protect us, both here and abroad. You know, it's not a British-based thing. You know, it's across the globe. Across the world, we see the rise of populist leaders who promise wine and beer, most of whom are multimillionaires, most of whom pass themselves off as being of the people and for the people, when actually it doesn't take much to scratch beneath the surface and see that really they're just interested in power and money. And we fall for it time and time again. So as Christians, how do we respond? Do we simply stay quiet and trust that God's plan will come to fruition? I mean, that is true. Yeah, we could sit back and just let God play his hand and see where it takes us. Micah tells us we've got to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with our God. We could do that passively. Yeah, we could just sit at home and go, yeah, do you know what? I love justice. I'm going to be just to people. I'm going to act with mercy. I'm going to walk humbly with God. But I don't have to do that out loud. I can do that just in my own bedroom, my own living room. Or we could be active about it. Yeah, we could be more outspoken, should we say? And we could actually call out acts of injustice. We could actually call out intolerance. We could make sure that we're open about the fact that we're walking with God. I believe that we are part of God's remnant. that we are part of the fulfillment of the prophecies contained in Micah. And I also believe that we have a responsibility to fight for justice whenever we see injustice. I believe we have a responsibility to demonstrate and pursue mercy wherever we see intolerance. And I believe that we have a responsibility to challenge those who would promote themselves on the basis of their personalities and whose sole aim is to sow division and reap the rewards that arise from it. You could read Micah as a boring, complicated, confusing historical account of the history of Israel. But the more I've read of it, the more I've read it this week, the more I've chosen to read it as a call to arms, a call to us as Christians to start living in the way that God would have us believe. Do we sit back and let events just unfold? I choose not to. I choose to get upset about the things that God would get upset about, that Christ would get upset about. I choose to stand up and be counted. What about you?